6. Mara rose from the couch to greet Luke as he came through the doorway of their suite on Coruscant. He met her halfway with open arms. "It's about time," she said, shutting her eyes and holding him close. R2-D2 trailed Luke into the room, tootled a greeting to Mara, and immediately headed for the suite's recharge station. "I would have been back sooner if Streen hadn't asked me to go to Yavin 4. "Trouble?" "Could be. Now that the Yuuzhan Vong have occupied Abroaskai, they could discover the Academy. If that happens, we have to think about relocating the younger Jedi. In the meantime, Streen, Cam, and Tion are watching over things." They had been separated for only a standard week, but Luke was alarmed at how delicate Mara felt to his touch. He considered trying to feel her through the Force, but feared she would detect him and resent the intrusion. Instead, he luxuriated in her embrace for a moment longer, then backed away to hold her at arm's length. "Let me look at you." "If you must," she said, with elaborate sufferance. Her face was pale, and her eyes were underscored by dark circles. But some of the sheen had returned to her red-gold hair, and her green eyes sparked to life under his gaze. "What's the verdict, Doctor?" Luke pretended not to hear the quaver in her voice, but Mara saw through his pretense. There wasn't much they could hide from each other, though one of the more devastating aspects of Mara's illness had been its detrimental effect on the depth and intensity of their bond. "You tell me." "It hasn't been my best week." She smiled frailly, then compressed her lips in annoyance. "But I don't know how I ever let you talk me into coming here. And don't say you got me at a weak moment." "I wasn't going to." Months earlier, Mara had determined that the best way to fight the illness was to remain active and fully attuned to the Force. But after the brutal murder of Alegos Akla and the devastation visited on Ithor, her condition had worsened. If all of Luke's and Mara's instincts were wrong, and the illness wasn't linked to something the Yuuzhan Vong had introduced to the galaxy, her vitality at least appeared to wax and wane in accordance with the invasion. Where following the minor victories at Helska and Dantooine she had emerged strong, Ithor had constituted a new low, not only for Mara, but for everyone. Luke slipped out of his cloak, and the two of them moved arm in arm in the suite's modestly furnished sitting room, his black trousers and shirt in stark contrast to Mara's white sheath. Mara lowered herself into a corner of the couch, her taut legs tucked beneath her. She gathered her long hair in one hand and twirled it behind her head, then spent a moment staring out the window at passing traffic. The apartment wasn't far from the Grand Convocation Center, but sonic cancellation glass kept the noise from intruding. "Did you meet with Dr. Ulos?" Luke asked at last. She turned to him.
"I did."
"And?"
"He told me the same thing Silgal and Tomla El told me 7 months ago. The illness isn't like anything he's ever seen, and there's nothing he can do. But I could have told you that, and saved both of us the trouble of coming here. Ulos wouldn't come right out and say that the Force is the only thing keeping me alive, but he implied as much."
"There's the one other case," Luke started to say. Mara shook her head.
"He died, just after you left for Kashyyyk."
Luke allowed his disappointment to show. Ahodin Ism Ulos was not only a noted physician, but also a researcher of some celebrity, as a result of his investigations into the Death Seed plague that had swept through the Meridian Sector 12 years earlier.
"Did he have anything to say about the beetle?"
"The infamous Belkaden beetle," Mara said jocularly, then shook her head.
"Other than that, it's also like nothing he's ever seen. But the tests he ran didn't show any evidence that my illness is connected to the thing."
Luke grew introspective. Many years earlier, the Mon Calamari Jedi, Silgal, had employed the Force to heal then-Chief of State Mon Mothma of an assassin-induced nano-destroyer virus.
So how was it that she and Ulos and the Athorian healer, Tomla El, could all remain powerless against the molecular disorder that had assailed Mara? It could only have come from the Yuuzhan Vong, Luke told himself. In the midst of an all-embracing conflict, he and Mara were waging their own private struggle. Was the memorial difficult? Mara said, clearly eager to talk about something other than the state of her health. Luke looked up and took a breath. Not for Chewbacca's immediate family. Wookiees are very accepting of death. But I am worried about Han. Mara frowned sympathetically. Your sister might be Han's soulmate, but Chewbacca was his first mate. It's going to take time. I didn't help matters any. When I tried to suggest that he open himself up to the Force, he made a point of reminding me that he isn't a Jedi. Which is another reason he and Chewbacca were so close, Mara said. He's surrounded on all sides. She grew quiet, then surfaced from her thoughts and looked at Luke. I was just remembering a time I saw your father hurl someone against a bulkhead for showing a lack of respect for the Force. I don't think that's the right approach to take with Han, Luke said wryly. But it's exactly the approach the Jedi are expected to take with the Yuuzhan Vong. Yes, by the same people who fear us taking over the galaxy or succumbing to the dark side. Mara smiled wanly. Things haven't exactly turned out as planned, have they? Even after the peace accord, I never doubted that we'd face challenges and go through the usual ups and downs. But I truly believed we'd be able to send any enemies of the New Republic running for cover. Now I'm not so sure. Luke nodded, wondering if Mara was referring obliquely to her own enemy. If so, her words suggested that she was losing confidence in her ability to prevail. Mon Mothma once asked me if I thought my students would eventually set themselves up as an elite priesthood or as a band of champions. Would the Jedi choose to insulate themselves or act in the service of those in need? Would we be a part of the citizenry or outside it? He narrowed his eyes in recollection. She envisioned Jedi who would be willing to get their hands dirty, Jedi in all walks of life, medicine, law, politics, and the military. She saw it as my duty to set an example, to become a genuine leader rather than a mere figurehead. And she'd be the first to admit that her concerns were unfounded. Would she? Obi-Wan and Yoda never talked about what the distant future held for me. Maybe if I hadn't spent the past few years trying to learn how to overcome Isla Miri and tune my lightsaber to cleave Cortosis ore, I'd know what course the Jedi should take now. It's the dark side that calls constantly for aggression and revenge, even against the Yuuzhan Vong. The stronger you become, the more you're tempted. Luke gazed at his wife. Maybe Jason's right about there being alternatives to fighting. He certainly didn't get that from his father. His coming to it on his own makes it all the more significant. He thinks I've paid too much attention to the Force as power, at the expense of understanding a more unifying Force. Jason is still a young man. He's young, but he's a deep thinker. What's more, he's right. I've always been more concerned with events in the here and now than the future. I don't have the long view, so I miss the big picture. I've had a harder time fighting myself than I had fighting my clone. Luke stood up and moved to the window. The Jedi have always been peacemakers. They've never been mercenaries. That's why I've tried to protect our independence and keep us from swearing allegiance to the New Republic. We aren't an arm of their military, and we never will be. Mara waited until she was certain he was finished. You're starting to sound like that Falanasi woman who took you on a wild Unax chase looking for your mother. Akana Norant Pell, Luke supplied. I wish I knew where her people went. Mara snorted. Even if you found them, I don't think the Yuuzhan Vong are going to be as susceptible to Falanasi-created illusions as the Yavitha were. Not judging by what we've seen. An ironic laugh escaped Mara. Akana, Akana, Gariel Captison, Callista, Luke Skywalker's lost gloves, not to mention that one on Folor.
Fondor, Luke corrected, and I was never in love with Tanith Shire.
Just the same, you met each of them during a time of crisis.
When haven't we been in crisis?
That's what I'm getting at. Should I be worried that someone new will cross your path this time?
Luke went to her.
Our crisis is the one that concerns me most, he said earnestly. We need a victory. You want to talk about irony? My father told me a story that happened right here in the Meridian Sector, maybe 12 standard years ago.
Captain Skent Groff, human and proud of it, with broad shoulders and a face that turned heads, was half-perched on the comscan integrator console of the Soothfast's cramped bridge, one high-booted leg extended to the floor. His captive audience, slouched at sundry duty stations, were the half-dozen who made up the light cruiser's bridge crew. The stations chirped and chimed intermittently, and the ship's Demorian power plant thrummed. The sloping viewports of the ingot-shaped vessel looked out on cloud-blanketed Exodo II and its poor excuse for a moon, and some light-years distant, the luminous dust clouds of the spangled Veil Nebula. He stationed aboard the Corbantis out of Durin Orbital when the ship's tasked to investigate reports of a pirate attack on Amplikin. Actually, nobody knew for sure whether it was pirates or forces from Budpak violating a truce accord. But in fact, the whole thing turned out to be a ruse engineered by Lorinar Corp, a contingent of Imperials, and a guy named Ashgod, who was trying to spread a plague through this entire sector.
The Death Seed Plague, the young female Sulliston at the Navicomputer said.
Give the lady a glitter stim spliff, Groff said good-naturedly. She knows her history. Anyway, the Corbantis never makes it to Amplikin. It's quilled by a flock of Lorinar's smart missiles and left for dead in an ice chasm on Damanite Yours B. Not too far from here as the Minok flies. But then along comes Han Solo and his Wookiee pal.
Who just happened to be in the neighborhood? The communications officer asked.
Actually, they were searching for Chief of State Leia Organa Solo, who'd gone missing. But that's beside the point.
Groff rested his elbow on a deactivated R-Series droid fastened to the bulkhead.
Solo and the Wookiee investigate the Corbantis and find 17 severely rad-burned survivors, one of which was my father, and they take them to the sector medical facility at Bagsho on Nim Drovis. At the time, the place was being run by some well-known Hoden physician. I can't remember his name. Ulips or Uplos, something like that. And Uplos does everything he can for his patients. The problem was that the med facility was so overcrowded that some of the survivors had to be relocated to Bacta wards in the annex. And what do you think happens?
They come down with the Death Seed Plague, the navigator ventured.
Groff nodded. They come down with the Death Seed Plague, which just goes to show you that even when you figure you've cheated the odds, you're still a statistic waiting to happen.
And now here you are, all these years later, the navigator said, right back where your father was, making local space safe for Drobus's Zwill packers.
Zwill?
The Twi'lek enlisted rating at the threat assessment station said.
Some sort of narcotic, Groff said.
The navigator's recurved mouth quirked a smile. For those with membrane-lined breathing tubes wide enough to...
Captain, the comm officer interrupted.
Durin reports that their hyperspace orbiter has picked up a Kronal radiant event in our sector. Confidence is high that a large ship has reverted to real space. Interrogators are awaiting a telesponder return.
Groff leapt to his feet and hurried to his swivel-mounted chair.
Do we have visual contact?
Not yet, sir. The event is well outside our sensor range.
Groff turned to the ComSec officer.
Scramble Gauntlet Squadron and go to General Quarters.
Sirens blared throughout the ship, and garnet light began to suffuse the bridge. The ComSec officer looked over his shoulder at Groff.
Sir, forward tech station reports countermeasures enabled, shields up and fully charged.
Data on the event coming in, the enlisted rating said. Ship is an unknown quantity. Radar and laser imaging computers are compiling a portrait.
Groff swung to face the hollow imager, where the ghostly likeness of an enormous, faceted polyhedron, black as onyx, was already taking shape.
Yuuzhan Vong?
Unknown, sir, the enlisted rating said. It doesn't match anything in our databanks.
Move us out of stationary orbit.
Sir, drive profiles of the intruder match those of a vessel in the enemy flotilla that attacked Abroaskai.
Gauntlet Squadron is out the door, moving to recon position.
Any chatter from the Yuuzhan Vong vessel?
Groff asked.
Negative, sir.
No, wait. Scanners now show two ships.
Again, Groff swiveled to face the hollow imager, where a second, smaller polyhedron was forming alongside the original.
Is that thing a new arrival, or are we observing some sort of mitosis?
It appears to be a component of the larger vessel, sir. Vessel 1 is changing course, bearing for Durin Orbital Station. Module is accelerating to intercept our starfighters. Gauntlet is breaking formation, splitting up into attack elements.
Patch me through to Gauntlet Leader, Groff ordered the comm officer.
Gauntlet Leader is patched through, the woman said.
Gauntlet 1, can you show us what you're seeing?
Relayed over the command net annunciator, the squadron leader's voice was thin-sounding and disrupted by bursts of static.
Transmitting.
Looks like the galaxy's biggest decoder ring lost its stone.
Will you look at that thing? Someone on the bridge remarked, as a real-time image replaced the hollow simulation.
Sir, bioenergy massing in the smaller ship. They have us in target lock.
Groff engaged the chair's safety harness. Brace for impact.
Effulgent golden light filled the soothfast's forward viewports. The ship shook as if snatched and shaken by a giant hand.
Plasma energy, the enlisted rating reported. Consistent with Yuuzhan Vong ranged weapons. No damage to vital systems. Shields are holding.
Range?
Secondary vessel is moving within striking distance, sir.
Groff gave his command cap a downward tug. Tell Gauntlet Squadron to steer clear. Starboard main batteries, stand by to return fire.
A retrofitted, proficient-class ship of Corellian design, the Soothfast was 850 meters long, but with only 10 heavy turbo lasers and 20 ion cannons, it was wanting in firepower. Some of the compartmentalization that had originally reinforced the cruiser's hull had been removed to create a docking bay for starfighters, but even with the fighters, the sharp-nosed ship remained an ancillary weapon.
Gauntlet is clear, sir.
Groff nodded. Ready proton torpedoes, set for detonation at the first hint of gravitic anomalies.
Sir, torpedoes are armed as dictated by new protocol.
Ready, starboard turbo lasers, Groff ordered.
Sir, turbo lasers enabled.
Groff looked at the weapons officer. If that stone operates true to form, it'll vacuum the torpedoes, but the lasers stand a good chance of scoring.
Understood, Captain.
Groff pivoted his chair. Main batteries, commence fire.
Blinding projectiles streaked into space, followed by lances of blue-green light, converging far in the distance with radiant strobing flashes.
Direct hit.
Fire, Groff repeated.
Again, torpedoes and coherent light streamed from the ship, and explosions wreathed the enemy ship, vying with the stars for brilliance.
Cease fire. Groff glanced at his executive officer.
Let's hope that softened things up. Commander, tell Gauntlet to begin their run.
The XO relayed the order over the command net. On the bridge's main display screen, magnified views showed T-65A3 X-wings and E-2B wings commencing attack runs against the lapidary ship. Bursts of scarlet laser fire spewed from the snub fighter's wingtip cannons, and proton torpedoes loosed by the B-wings blazed radiant pink trails through space.
but the enemy ship merely consumed the energy and answered the attack with geysers of molten rock. Resembling shards of mirrored glass, individual hull facets flared to life, then winked out, becoming black as the ship's background.
"Soothfast, this thing's going after our shields," Gauntlet One reported a moment later.
"Gauntlet One, order your fighters to expand the field of the inertial compensators and switch over to new scan and targeting protocols. And keep an eye out for coral skippers."
"Already done, Soothfast, but shields can't be expanded enough to compensate for the warship's drawing power."
"Shields down," another voice said, "breaking off."
"Stay with your wingmates," Gauntlet One shouted. "Keep your lasers quieted up on rapid cycle."
"Compensator is in failure. Aborting attack run."
"Watch your tail, Gauntlet Eight."
"Captain, energy massing in the Yuuzhan Vong vessel."
Graf swiveled to his XO. "Instruct Gauntlet to abort."
"Enemy vessel is firing."
On the main screen, real-time holo showed three starfighters vanish in fleeting explosions. A sense of urgency punctuated Gauntlet One's words over the net.
"We're taking casualties. 2, 4, and 5. Still can't get a fix on Dovin Basil or weapons emplacements."
"What's he talking about?" Graf asked brusquely.
The Twi'lek enlisted rating flipped his headtails over his shoulders and studied console displays.
"Battle analysis computer is working on it, sir. Enemy weapons and singularity projectors appear to be mobile. Sir, it's like the entire hull is capable of delivering fire and creating gravitic anomalies."
"Captain, module has drawn another bead on us."
No sooner had the words left the comm officer's mouth than the cruiser was jarred by a powerful strike. Bridge illumination diminished, then brightened, and blue electricity danced over one of the consoles. Vibrated free of its magnetic hold on the bulkhead, the R-Series droid tipped forward to the deck. Fans clicked on, exhausting smoke from the area.
"Damage assessment coming in from forward technical station. Number 2 power generator is down. Deflector shields are marginal."
"Order Gauntlet to regroup and pull back," Graf said quickly.
"Alert crash and recovery crews to make ready. Fire control, stand by to coordinate forward turbo lasers and ion cannons. I want a sustained burst to rake that ship pole to pole."
A glance at the display screen showed him what remained of Gauntlet Squadron fleeing for their lives. Fire! Once more, energy streaked from the ship, but no telltale flashes followed. Graf studied the display screen.
"Did we miss?" he asked in disbelief.
"Negative, sir. Enemy vessel appears to have absorbed the energy."
"All guns," Graf said. "Fire!"
Light painted local space with such intensity that everyone on the bridge had to turn from the viewports. It was as if the Soothfast had been clipped on the jaw by a heavy fist and was seeing stars.
"Enemy ship is altering course, taking evasive action."
"All guns, fire!" Graf barked.
"Multiple direct hits, evidence of debris. Enemy is altering course again, speed is diminishing."
Graf twisted to the navigator. "Maintain pursuit, stay on it." Then, without warning, an enormous explosion erupted in the distance, saturating the display screens with white light. When Graf could, he stared out the viewport, but could see no sign of the Yuuzhan Vong ship.
"Where did it go? Did it jump?"
"Negative, sir," the enlisted rating told him. "Debris is consistent with an all-out kill."
A spontaneous cheer rose from the bridge crew.
"Quiet!" Graf shouted.
"Did we just get lucky, or did we discover a weak spot?"
"Unknown, sir, but the vessel is completely destroyed. We must have overwhelmed it. The ship that generated the module is bearing away from Durin Orbital Station all speed."
Graf removed his hat and scratched his head.
"I don't get it."
"Captain, Gauntlet Leader reports that the destroyed vessel jettisoned an escape pod. The pod should come into visual range any moment."
Graf turned to the display screen.
"Full magnification."
The navigator pointed to a fast-moving glimmer of light.
"There it is, sir."
Graf saw what looked like a cylindrical asteroid far from home, a small portion of its aft surface faceted.
"What's its course?"
"Bearing for Exodo 2.
"Wouldn't be my first choice," Groff remarked.
"Present heading will bring it just in range of number 2 tractor beam."
Groff glanced at his XO. "Could be a trap, sir. Some kind of sleeper bomb."
Groff nodded grimly. "Engage the tractor beam, but only to hold that thing at bay. Commander, alert Gauntlet. Tell them to scan for any evidence of weapons, but to keep their distance. Even if it turns out to be harmless, I don't want it anywhere near this ship. And patch me through to fleet office."
A new voice crackled from the annunciator.
"Soothfast, this is Gauntlet 3. It's definitely an escape pod, probably Yorick Coral. Negative for armaments, but registering life readings. No bigger than a land speeder. Rudimentary Dovin Basal retros and attitude control. Faceted but transparent canopy. Like a sheet of mica. Request permission to investigate at close range."
Groff mulled it over for a moment, then said, "Gauntlet 3, you are green to investigate, but stay sharp."
"Affirmative, Soothfast. Staying sharp."
No one spoke for a long moment, then the speaker crackled back to life.
"Soothfast, I got a peek at the interior. Looks to be 2, repeat, 2 occupants. One appears to be female. The other, well, sir, the other is anyone's guess."